I want to start by thanking all of the volunteers, the faith leaders, the union members, the donors, who we've been united on a cause. And that cause was to try to ease the toxic two-party atmosphere in Lansing that's holding this state back. And I know everybody remains committed to that, which is what makes this such a hard day.
An absolutely seismic shift in Michigan politics yesterday as former Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan drops out of the gubernatorial race. Yeah, you heard that right. And here's the unbelievable thing about it. I think that even for somebody like me who sees that the party politics are so strong, they're so entrenched, they are as part of the system as apple pie is to Americana. It is so almost unbelievably insurmountable to think that somebody could run as an independent and beat a Democrat or beat a Republican and beat the machine that's behind them. But when you throw Mike Duggan's name behind the word independent, it's hard to not take his candidacy seriously. And you look at, I mean, again, you look out the windows here of the Fisher Building over downtown Detroit, and you see the job that he did here and how that translates to Lansing would be almost seamless, because you take a city that was in the throes of bankruptcy and you rejuvenate them to be one of the hottest cities in the United States of America and a place to be, a place to travel, a place to come see the history, the culture, spend your money on the restaurants. Those are all things that Mike Duggan either did or played a huge role in. And so Mike Duggan's candidacy as an independent, while it seemed like it was going to be an uphill battle, when you talk to people that are around the game, they tell you all the time, don't count out Mike Duggan. Can't count out Mike Duggan. But even Mike Duggan ran against an insurmountable situation. And one of the things that he talked about yesterday was when he went to national pollsters and said, what are you seeing? They said, well, we're seeing what you're experiencing, which is a surge in Democratic support, a surge for the party that is not in power. Why? Well, probably because people are paying $5 a gallon for a gallon of gas. Probably because there is an active conflict in the Middle East with Iran. And that's just part of it. You could probably start and stop there. Those are the most recent examples. And there has been a shift towards the Democrats, which makes it very hard for an independent candidate, even somebody like Mike Duggan, to not only gain the support in the polls, but to then gain the support in fundraising. And when he talked about the fundraising yesterday, he said there just wasn't a lot there from around the country.
We had to deal with reality that we were 11 points down and slipping. And the question was, do we have the resources to get to everybody, explain to them, you can vote Mike for independent and vote the rest of the ticket. It doesn't have to change anything. But we are dealing with the reality of fundraising. And while I was really proud in the December fundraising that 94% of our money came from the state of Michigan, we knew we had to build a national fundraising network. The Republicans and Democrats have enormous resources. Everybody knew that. I have been all over this country with everybody who has expressed interest in independent campaigns. And there's a lot of interest. But as I've learned, funding for independent candidacies nationally is still in its infancy. And we had to recognize the reality that if we were going to compete, it was going to have to be asking the Michigan donors to double down on what they'd already done.
And he said he just couldn't do that. And in his statement that he released yesterday ahead of a press conference that he held, he said, if we were even in the polls and down in fundraising, there's a path to victory. If they're even in fundraising and down in the polls, there's a path to victory. But when you're down in the polls and you're down in fundraising, the mountain to climb is just too steep. And that's what it ultimately ended up being for Mike Duggan. I'll tell you, I would have thought he was in it for the long haul. And we're going to talk to Adrian Heman at Grassroots Midwest coming up next. We'll get his perspective on it as well. Also, some very sad news out of the world of racing. Kyle Busch dead at the age of 41, a future NASCAR Hall of Famer. Here's the final call of his last win.
He knows all about getting to victory lane. Here he comes off at turn number four. Kyle Busch wins at Dover for the fifth time in his career.
All right. Yeah, baby.
That's awesome. Very good, very good for Aspire Motorsports.
Kyle Busch, a two-time Cup Series champion, won more races than anyone across NASCAR's three National Series. He died after some sort of severe illness. We don't know what that was, but it was just 12 days ago when he was racing at Watkins Glen that he was calling for a doctor before the race was even over.
Can somebody try to find Bill Heisel? He's the doctor guy. Tell him I need him after the race, please.
And so something was obviously wrong. He was in a racing simulator, in the Chevy racing simulator in Concord Wednesday, when he became unresponsive. He was transported to a Charlotte hospital, and there was no recovering from that. Something went very, very wrong inside Kyle Busch. Again, we don't know exactly what that was, but so many of the NASCAR elite have responded to this. Dale Earnhardt Jr., a number of racers, but a very sad situation for a man who was far, far too young, and will continue to watch, hopefully for some developments as to what that cause of death was, because we're just not quite sure what it was at the moment. Meanwhile, the Senate decided to punt. Well, what did they punt? They punted on voting on that reconciliation package for DHS and CBP, ICE. And this all comes as Republicans in the high chamber are upset over this anti-weaponization fund that has been brought forth. Bill Cassidy, of course, who lost his primary battle in Louisiana, said there will be no vote today. He has been an outspoken critic, obviously, but Republican lawmakers are divided whether to include money, for example, the White House ballroom that's been included in this reconciliation bill, because reconciliation bills don't require that 60 vote threshold to beat the filibuster. So as long as there is money tied to a bill like this, they just need a simple majority. Well, the problem is now there's been a bunch of stuff included that are angering Republicans in the Senate. And so it has created a very, very tough spot for the president, and we'll continue to watch that. Also, it is Memorial Day weekend. We're going to take you through 9 o'clock, get you ready for your long weekend. AAA, despite all the rising of prices of gas, of airplane jet fuel, things like that, AAA is expecting a record travel weekend for Americans. 45 million Americans will travel at least 50 miles, according to AAA. That includes yesterday to Monday. Domestic travel is slightly higher than it was last year. And so people are still going to try to get out. Obviously, here in the state of Michigan, you go up north, there's nothing better than that on a Memorial Day. Coming up next, we're talking Mike Duggan, why he dropped out of the race, what it means for the Democrats and the Republicans. Adrian Heman on the other side. It's Jer Morning.
Despite all of that, we're standing here today where we don't feel like there is a path forward. And I never ran to be a spoiler. I was trying to change politics. And as Mayor LaRusso said, I told everybody from the beginning, if there comes a point where I don't think there's a path forward, I won't continue to pursue it.
And that's got to be a hard realization to get to, is when the money is not there nationally. And he says that they raised, 94% of their funds from in-house, from in the state of Michigan. But that wasn't going to be enough to go up against the political machines that are the Republican and the Democratic Party. And when you can't bring in the money and you're falling behind in polls, I mean, that was the latest Detroit Regional Chamber poll that had Jocelyn Benson ahead of Mike Duggan by almost 11 points. And so when you're down by double digits, just a couple of months ahead of the primary, when you're down in fundraising, as Mike Duggan said, there wasn't a path forward. Adrian Heman is the CEO of Grassroots Midwest, joins us this morning to talk about it. Adrian, it's good to have you. Did you foresee this? Was this something that you could read in the tea leaves, or were you surprised by this announcement yesterday too?
I mean, this was always a possibility. What I found more surprising was how early it happened. Mm-hmm. He said at the outset that he would drop out if he didn't see a path forward. And, that possibility was always on the table. He was trying to do something very difficult.
I thought when he said yesterday at his press conference that when he went to national pollsters and it became pretty clear that there had been a significant shift towards Democrats, call it the war in Iran, call it gas prices, whatever it is, something has shifted. And obviously that's going to impact Republicans, but it's going to impact independents too.
Yeah, that's right. Mayor Duggan was sort of stuck fighting the last war. When he announced this independent campaign, we were coming off of an election where Democrats got trounced nationally, lost complete power in Washington, D.C., and their brand was in a very, very bad spot. The Democrats' brand hasn't improved, but the economy has been run into a ditch between tariffs and the Iran war. People are much more focused on consumer prices for things like gas, groceries, consumer goods than they are on parochial Michigan-specific issues. I mean, he said yesterday, he wanted to talk about education and about the roads and, about fixing the state. But the political conversation is being dominated by the national economy.
Mm. I'm curious to know, I had seen some criticism online about him talking about national funding. Funding is and fundraising is always at the heart of all of these political discussions. But when you're an independent candidate, talk about the hill that you got to climb because you don't have the political machine behind you.
Yeah, that's right. Running as an independent is going to be more expensive by a lot. It's not possible to raise enough money just in Michigan to win one of these statewide races. You need to be able to tap into national organizations and national donors so that you can fundraise, what will end up being a nine-figure sum that you have to spend, between the hard dollars and the soft dollars that you raised in order to be elected governor of Michigan as an independent.
Did you agree with his assessment that there was no path at this point?
I basically do. Yeah. The dynamic, the political dynamic has shifted so much in Democrats' favor because Republicans control the national government in D.C. and people are focused on the national economy. So they're focused on national politics. And they're also focused on, probably the greatest attention getter in politics of the last 100 years, President Donald Trump. No one has successfully been able to push him off the front page of the political conversation for the last 10 years.
Mm. What does this do to the Jocelyn Bensons, John James, Perry Johnson, those that are on either side? What does this do for them?
I mean, you have to call Jocelyn Benson a heavy favorite right now. The Democratic nominating contest is functionally decided. Sheriff Swanson's running an energetic campaign, but he doesn't have any money. It's a worse version of the problem that Mayor Duggan had. The Republicans nominating contest is not yet decided. Mm-hmm. John James is the favorite in that contest. He's ahead, but Republicans still have to coalesce around their own candidate. The general election started for Jocelyn Benson yesterday.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. Adrian Heeman, thank you so much. Appreciate your time and your insight as always. We'll talk again very soon.
Great to be with you.
Yeah,
thanks.
Yeah, you got it. Here's the other thing too, and this is something that I immediately when I heard the news yesterday. First of all, I had a terrible time to pop into my barber to get a haircut. Nothing's going to happen. I got to run home. I got to do some stuff. We're selling the house. I got to get it ready. I got to get my hair cut real quick. So I popped into the barber, come out, and Mike Duggan has dropped out of the race. It was terrible timing. But one of the first things I thought of is if you go back to the presidential election 2 years ago, and in the throes of the campaign, in the throes of the primaries, all of that, there was a push to try to get an independent candidate at that level. And we've seen, third party, fourth parties, independents that have tried to run for president, right? And to no avail ever. Because, again, there isn't going to be enough dollars, enough pennies and cents out there to contribute enough, significantly enough, to an independent campaign. You won't even touch the degree of what Democrats and Republicans are able to do. So it's virtually impossible with the system we have in place. But I was thinking, okay, well, what does this mean for independents going forward? Because, again, if there was anybody that was going to be able to make headway as an with an I in front of their name, it would be Mike Duggan. I took calls on this very airway a year and a half ago when Mike Duggan was bandying about this idea of running for governor. And I had conservatives, I had Republicans calling in saying, I would vote for Mike Duggan. Yeah, he's a Democrat, but he's not what you see on CNN or MSNBC or Fox News. This is something different. Why? Because he's in our backyard. And we can actually see the difference. All you got to do is drive down the lodge, drive down 75, drive down 94. However you get downtown, you can see it. So it's something tangible that you can actually see and experience to know, well, this guy was about something. He did something. So I find it very interesting that if somebody like Mike Duggan in the state of Michigan can't make headway as an independent, I think that does signal exactly where the electorate and where donors view independents at this point in time. The new Fed chair will be sworn in. What does it mean? What is he experiencing? It's next in Chair Morning. All right, welcome back. So Kevin Warsh is going to be sworn in as the new Fed chair today. And boy, right off the rip, they've got a June 16 and 17 Federal Reserve meeting. That is where they'll make a decision on whether to cut or even raise the interest rate, because there's been some signs that that might happen. And actually, there seems to be some policymakers on the Fed that seem to be open to an interest rate hike. That is not necessarily the news that I think some would like to hear. But also, inflation did rise in their last report, and that's something that needs to be combated and beaten down as well. And Patrick Anderson, the principal and CEO of the Anderson Economic Group, joins us to talk about it this morning. Patrick, it's always great to have you. What are some of the things that he is going to have to deal with as soon as he is sworn in today?
Well, his first challenge is that the president of the United States, who properly nominated him, Donald J. Trump, who wants a different direction at the Fed, is a notoriously impatient man when it comes to things like this. And he was very harsh, I think unduly harsh, at the outgoing Fed chair. In terms of, like, you know, calling him unintelligent and other things that are, you know, not suitable for family radio, even at 6:30 in the morning.
That's right.
But
when we get a call from Brendan Carr, it's a whole mess at that point.
Yeah. So it was very harsh with the Powell Fed. And here's the new Fed chair who is looking at inflation going up, not down, who's looking at wartime stresses that are causing energy markets to go up, who's looking at a spurt of jobs, which is a good thing. And generally, those all suggest tightening monetary policy, not loosening it.
So is Warsh somebody who's hawkish or dovish? Is he somebody that looks at fighting inflation, you're going to keep those interest rates where they are, or bring them up to beat back that inflation? Or is he more on the side of economic growth, employment, try to bring those rates down a little bit?
He would definitely describe himself as being in favor of economic growth. And of course, Powell would say, I'm in favor of economic growth too. Sure. And that's why we're doing the following things. But in this case, Warsh has staked out some intellectually different grounds. He's argued that the Fed has gotten too big for its own britches, which is absolutely correct. I mean, the Fed got involved, particularly under the Biden administration, and various efforts to, you know, fight climate change and pursue these various social goals that were just not what it could do well, and arguably what it shouldn't have been doing at all. And it's ended up with trillions of dollars of assets and liabilities, and that's just not what the American Central Bank should be doing. So he's staked that out before he came in. I think that's just as important a part of his mission here as short-term decisions on interest rates.
Well, if you're looking for a home at this point, mortgage rates could decline if those rates go lower. Loans could become more affordable, particularly for automotives. There may be a little more comfortability for businesses when it comes to hiring, investing, things like that. But if things rise, you might see the interest rate if they notch that up a bit. I mean, you could see layoffs, things like that. So there is cost positives and negatives to both. How do you think they should handle this? Should they take the Powell perspective and just try to get that inflationary number down to 2%?
They should definitely take that perspective, because that's not just a Powell perspective. That's the policy of the Federal Reserve. And when they didn't follow it during much of the Biden administration, during the, quote, transitory, end quote, days, we had a big burst of inflation. We had much dissatisfaction. We hurt our economy, hurt our standing in the world. And for all the politicians that are listening out there, and a lot of them are now, paying quite close attention to this, a lot of politicians lost their jobs. In particular, this was not good for the Biden administration to have the spurt of inflation. That's one of the reasons you see the Trump administration so focused on gas prices and on getting inflation down, because Americans have proven that they will punish the administration in office if they let inflation get out of hand.
And so the everyday impact for people on these decisions, you may not feel it every moment of every day when dealing with your finances, but long term, there's a lot of ramifications here.
Long term and short term. I mean, America is so benefited by being the reserve currency, the whole hoster of the reserve currency of the world. Mm-hmm. We're the leading economy in the world, and people look to us for stability and for a hard currency, and a currency that's not going through the kind of deflation, inflation type of cycles that you see in a lot of other countries. So we benefit, meaning we benefit short term, we benefit medium term, we benefit long term. The fact that we can talk intelligently about borrowing money to buy a new house, and maybe it's 6%, maybe it's 7%, maybe it's 8%, but it's not going to be 40%.
Right.
Right. And it's not going to be zero. I mean, you have a lot of predictability here in the United States that lets people talk and plan for buying a car, buying a house. So we all benefit from that. And to keep that, we have to have an independent central bank that does its job. I'm right now optimistic about this new chair.
Yeah. Well, what is the bond market experiencing right now? Seems to be a lot of upward pressure, particularly on yields. How is that? You talk about the dollar being the currency of the world. Well, how is that impacting that, especially with all, with everything going on in the Middle East?
the biggest thing there, Chris, we've talked about this, is the United States now has over 100% of its GDP in publicly held debt. So this is something that people like me have been warning about for years, that other people are warning about. And I must say, both Democrats and Republicans over the last, say, 8 years have paid almost no attention to this. But if this is a long-term issue, and particularly folks that are thinking about their retirement savings, or they're approaching retirement or in retirement, that is something we need to deal with that we have not.
Interesting. Patrick Anderson of the Anderson Economic Group, always great insight. Thank you very much. Have a nice long weekend, huh?
All right. Happy Memorial Day to everybody out there.
Yeah. You as well. By the way, speaking of Memorial Day, what's like on the grill? What must be on the grill on Memorial Day?
Ribs, sure. Your classic burgers and dogs, of course.
Okay.
Nice potato salad.
Yeah. That's
mac
good.
Mac and cheese. Wow. I'm hungry.
It's all coming. Kelsey is with us today. Brian's out. Kelsey, what do you dial up for the holiday?
I don't know that we really do much for the holiday,
okay,
in all honesty.
Yeah.
Probably like grilling some meats or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of with you, Jason. Ribs on the grill on Memorial Day is pretty,
I mean, I'm
good.
I'm a big fan of like steak and stuff, but steak I feel I can eat another time. Like when it comes to like the holiday barbecues, you got to have your dogs, burgers,
for
ribs,
sure,
potato salad.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's too early in the year for like really good corn on the cob, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, sure. That's how I'm going to ring in the 250 this year. It just good American sweet corn.
Nothing wrong with that.
That's right. Coming up on the other side, obviously, we're talking about the news of Mike Duggan dropping out of the race today, or yesterday, excuse me. Absolutely seismic shift in Michigan politics. Also, Lansing lawmakers passing some money for Selfridge. Representative Ron Robinson. On the other side, it's Jer Morning. So the Senate voted 34-0 this week to approve $152 million in supplemental spending for Selfridge. That had already previously passed the House. I'd bet you a cup of coffee that Governor Gretchen Whitmer is going to sign that thing. But it also unlocks almost $800 million, $792 to be specific, in federal funding for construction for the preparation of the new aircrafts that are going to be there, the F-15EX and the KC-46 tankers. And it is exciting news for Selfridge, obviously, but it does put new life into that base. Ron Robinson is the representative of Michigan's 58th District. Selfridge is in your neck of the woods. Representative, it's good to have you.
Thanks for having me on this morning. I'm very excited about this fighter mission coming to Selfridge. Very, very big win for the entire state.
Yeah, no doubt about it, and some good bipartisan work here. Before we get to that, I want to just get your reaction to the news yesterday of Mike Duggan dropping out of the gubernatorial race.
Well, I mean, I got to tell you, it sent shockwaves through Lansing, to be sure. And I understand the not raising funds aspect of it, but I don't know. I think you just talk out and talking to my constituents, and at least in Macomb County, I know a lot of moderates were looking very serious at him. So I don't put a lot of stock in the polls. So I don't know if he thinks he didn't have a path, but just for people I've talked to, not to say he would have won, but I know there was a lot of people extremely surprised by his announcement yesterday.
Yeah. So let's talk about Selfridge here. The $152 million for the runway project is now all but signed, sealed, and delivered. Governor Gretchen Whitmer's got to put her John Hancock on it, and then that's going to be a go. And then this thing really starts to pick up.
And that's the thing. And there's been a lot of confusion about, why is the state picking this up? And just to catch people up, there was, people in the Air Force that maybe didn't want this mission to come to Selfridge so much. And so Governor Whitmer and Speaker Hall went to President Trump and said, hey, can we expedite this so that we get these fighter jets before you leave office to ensure this is going to happen? Mm-hmm. And so, the deal they came out of the room with is like, sure, but, the state's going to have to fork over the money to get these runways built to prepare for them. And, back in March, the House passed my clean resolution bill that, with no pork, $152 million for Selfridge. And, over the last couple of months, there's been a lot of political games and political this, that, and the other thing. But at the end of the day, they needed the money by June 1st. And like you said, the governor's going to sign it probably in the next couple of days, and we're going to get this done. And it's quite exciting because this is going to be a huge windfall for Michigan. This is going to bring hundreds of millions of dollars of economic impact to the state every year.
I was going to ask you about that because, it's when the governor went to Washington and met with the president and met with Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, the ball was rolling. It felt like there was a lot of forward momentum. They understood the national security interest for Selfridge to remain a vital part of their portfolio. But I always am a little cautious until things really kind of get done. But this is part of that direction. And when you talk about the economic impacts of it, it is synonymous with the community in Macomb County. I mean, really much of Southeast Michigan, but particularly Macomb County, and the economic impact there is going to continue to be great and bigger.
Yeah, and I think it's going to bring business to Michigan. I mean, I don't think people understand, how state-of-the-art these jets are. And this is going to create a lot of excitement, again, not just from Macomb County, but it's going to fan out through the entire state. So I think there's going to be a lot of districts that are affected by this in a positive way.
Yeah, interesting. Representative Ron Robinson, thank you so much for your time. As always, we appreciate you. It's nice to talk with another Specs grad as well.
Yes, sir.
have a nice Memorial Day and a nice long weekend. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks for having me. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, you got it. Meanwhile, the DNC unveiled their autopsy of the 2024 presidential election yesterday. And I'm running through the whole report. And one of the things that they try to make very clear is this isn't the stance of the DNC. We had commissioned this report and here's what we got. And we want to release this as a result of transparency. Okay. Well, part of what it does is it paints a pretty rough picture for Democrats. Because early in the report, it basically acknowledges that elections, including 2024, might lead to some changes within the party's approach. The kind of thinking, denialist at its core, prevents the party from seeking real accountability and from making the changes we need to deliver our promises to the American people, according to the report. It says that since Barack Obama's win in 2008, the party has vacillated between stagnation and retrogression, and says that on the whole, Democrats steadily lost ground since Obama's success. So it was the culmination of those losses that led to 2024. And the other part of all of this is former President Joe Biden neglected Kamala Harris in preparing her for a position like that. I don't know if that's necessarily true or if I agree with that. I think Kamala Harris as vice president was a liability. Anytime that they trotted her out to an event or put her in that spotlight, we got the word salads, we got the nonsense, we got the silliness, and they basically stashed her away. They basically didn't use her in the way that Donald Trump is using J.D. Vance, for example, where he is very much out front and center. He's part of the negotiating team on the Iran ceasefire deal. And so this idea that they neglected Kamala Harris, I think they saw her as a liability at some point. And then the I think the most obvious part of this autopsy was they didn't define Donald Trump the right way. It was a failure to remind the American voting population why they didn't like Donald Trump perhaps in 2020 and why they rejected him. And instead, they went a completely different route. And obviously, that was to their detriment. It really interesting report. And I don't know if they've learned enough about it yet. I don't know if they're taking those recommendations into play, but we'll see. 7 o'clock hour. It's coming up on JR Morning.
Despite all of that, we're standing here today where we don't feel like there is a path forward. And I never ran to be a spoiler. I was trying to change politics. And as Mayor LaRusso said, I told everybody from the beginning, if there comes a point where I don't think there's a path forward, I won't continue to pursue it.
Mike Duggan is out of the governor's race. Some unbelievable news yesterday. I suppose you could see the writing on the wall a little bit when it comes to money, when it comes to fundraising. But we have seen a wider push across the United States on independent candidates. And I'm not talking about an independent like Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders and Mike Duggan are two wildly different independents. And Mike Duggan's perspective, and you heard it a little bit there, is one of the reasons that he decided to run as an independent was this idea of breaking this tribal party politics, that you can't work together, you can't operate on the same level with people across the aisle. And that is problematic. And we've seen that at darn near every level of government, whether it's your city, your township, your county, the state level, or obviously at the federal level as being prime example number one. But I always thought Mike Duggan's candidacy as an independent should not be taken lightly, because all you have to do is drive downtown. All you got to do is go to a restaurant. All you got to do is watch the NFL draft to see how far Detroit has come. And of course, there's a lot of people that are part of this comeback story that the city of Detroit is continuing on. But Mike Duggan took over at a time when, you know, we were in the shadows of bankruptcy. It wasn't even until this week that bankruptcy was officially closed in the city of Detroit. So it's come a long way. So Mike Duggan gave us something tangible to see, to feel, to touch, to taste, to experience, to know that he was able to work with people across the political aisle as a Democrat mayor of the city of Detroit, to know that he was going to be able to be a successful independent governor of the state of Michigan. But what I know he accounted for, I think it was pretty clear in his press conference yesterday that he didn't anticipate it being both, was that not only was he sagging behind in the polls, and again, you can believe polls, you can be skeptical of polls like I am, But when you see that you're 11 points down in a poll that was released last week by the Detroit Regional Chamber to Jocelyn Benson, and you're not able to fundraise at an adequate level to keep up with the Republicans and Democrats, well, then that's a problem. And unfortunately, that's where Mike Duggan found himself. And I don't know that he actually ever believed that that would be the case. I think he thought it was a possibility. But he says that 94% of the money that they fundraised came from inside the state of Michigan. And at the end of the day, he felt like he couldn't go back. He and his campaign couldn't go back to the people of Michigan and ask for more.
We've been looking at these numbers every way that we are. We're saying, is there a path to win? And the truth of the matter is, when you're down 11 points and you're down in the fundraising, the path is not realistic. We said, can we in good conscience go to our volunteers, our donors, and say, double down on what you've done? And in our own minds, we didn't feel confident there was a path, and we couldn't in good conscience ask them to do that. And so what we're doing today is today is facing reality.
And so, unfortunately, whether you like the system or not, whether you like outside money nationally being brought into state politics to influence our elections, that is the system. And unfortunately, because of the entrenched politics that we find ourselves in on a daily basis, certainly at the federal level, but here in the state of Michigan, it's really hard to adequately fundraise when you're just asking voters here in the state of Michigan to contribute. And so, like he said, it's the reality. They're facing the reality. And so he is out, and it certainly sends things in a completely different direction here, possibly, because a lot of the questions were, well, who is he taking votes from? Is he taking more votes from Democrats? Is he taking more votes from Republicans? But now it's going to be much more cut and dry, and this obviously gives a huge boost to Jocelyn Benson. We'll talk to Tom Leonard coming up at 7:35 more about this. Meanwhile, Kyle Busch has died at the age of 41. He's a two-time NASCAR Cup winner. This is somebody who was very young, 41 years old, and he became sick. He had some sort of illness. We don't know exactly what it is, but he just 12 days ago, while he was in the middle of a race at Watkins Glen, was calling for a doctor in his car.
Can somebody try to find Bill Heisel? He's the Hendrick doctor guy. Tell him I need him after the race, please.
He was driving in a Chevy racing simulator on Wednesday when he became unresponsive. He was transported to a hospital in Charlotte, North Carolina. That's according to the Associated Press. But the family hasn't confirmed what exactly happened to him, but just 41 years old. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's got two little kids, Brexton and Lennox, a wife, Samantha, that he leaves behind. And just an incredibly sad story for one of the titans of NASCAR. And if you were listening to our Fox News update at the top of the hour, one of the drivers said, this is our Kobe Bryant. This is the NASCAR's version of Kobe Bryant passing away in a helicopter crash, losing one of the greats. And that's the comp, the equation here. And it's incredibly sad, incredibly sad. Kyle Busch dead at the age of 41. Meanwhile, Senate Republicans, they're on their Memorial Day break, and they've thrown the brakes on their reconciliation bill. Why? Well, because partly of this $1.8 billion anti-weaponization fund. And this is tied to the IRS case that the president had dropped regarding his taxes that were leaked, and then this anti-weaponization fund geared towards those that were arrested on January 6th. And you've got this pushback because Republicans in the Senate are even saying that they worry that this could become some sort of slush fund for political allies. Lawmakers are wanting stricter limits and guardrails on who would qualify for this money. But there have been some incredibly heated discussions on Capitol Hill, and they've decided to throw the brakes on that reconciliation bill at the moment. 7:12, time for WJR's Business Beat, brought to you by Shelving.com. We rack your world. Here's Jeff Sloan, the founder and CEO of Startup Nation, to spotlight the entrepreneurial tech and startup community on WJR.
Good morning. As you head into work this morning, One thing that is on a lot of our minds is AI really coming for my job? I mean, it's a reasonable concern, right? And data already shows that indeed, at least for some of us, the concern is real. It's really happening, as many name brand big tech companies, for example, have already dismissed large portions of their workforces in favor of AI alternatives. And so how are these AI alternatives actually faring in place of a human workforce? Well, our company's seeing actual positive results, those they hope to see when making these layoffs. Well, a new study from Gartner provides some insight. Fortune magazine reports that the research and advisory firm surveyed 350 global business executives whose companies are pulling in at least $1 billion annually to investigate whether all these AI layoffs are really paying off in the real world. Here are some insights. The first takeaway is that the trend is real, with a total of 80% admitting to trimming their human staff to make investments in AI or autonomous technology. But they say they had no idea if AI would actually generate any benefits. They were simply buying into the promise of automation via AI. That's where things get interesting. The Gartner survey found that attempting to replace workers with AI isn't showing any detectable returns for these companies. And to make matters worse, many of these businesses specifically reduced their headcount to free up the cash needed to support AI technology in its place, meaning they sacrificed valuable institutional knowledge and employee goodwill for very little or nothing in return. Now, other studies also corroborate the Gartner study showing similar results. An MI study conducted last year found that AI is, quote unquote, failing to generate meaningful revenue growth at the vast majority of companies that embrace it and for which employees were replaced by it. Now, one positive note, the Gartner survey did report some positive outcomes, including when companies leverage AI as a form of people amplification rather than as replacement, meaning that they give their employees AI tools to boost efficiency instead of replacing them outright. So interesting insights here. No doubt AI is a great tool for efficiency and productivity. The questions still remain, is replacing human workforce with AI as a business strategy one that's going to hold up? I'm Jeff Sloan, founder and CEO of StartupNation.com, and that's today's Business Beat on the great voice of the Great Lakes, WJR.
Well, the World Health Organization has declared the Ebola disease outbreak in the Congo and Uganda a public health emergency of international concern. And that was certainly on display when somebody from the Congo boarded a plane from Paris to Detroit. And that plane was diverted to Montreal as a result of that passenger being on board as to not bring that person into the United States, just out of an abundance of caution. But this becomes a much bigger concern, certainly due to global travel, and the United States health officials trying to keep this deadly disease out of the United States. Dr. Joel K. Meyer is the Associate Professor of Internal Medicine, the Chief of Infectious Disease at Wayne State University, and joins us to talk about it. Doc, it's good to have you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Let's start on the basis of what Ebola is. Why is it so deadly?
Yeah. So Ebola is a class of organisms that's termed as a viral hemorrhagic fever. And the symptoms that, you know, we have classically seen in patients that have had Ebola virus in previous outbreaks are quite concerning. Initially, it can start off and look like the flu, and in many parts of Africa, it can be very much indistinguishable from malaria, which is, of course, the most common febrile illness throughout Africa. But in the later stages, there are some patients that have experienced, I think the quintessential sign is hemorrhage and bleeding. In previous outbreaks, the strain that has driven the Ebola outbreak has had mortality rates as high as 79% left untreated. Mm. So this has been, you know, with us actually for 50 years. There have been periodic outbreaks over the years, and, you know, we're poised to see another one with a little bit of a different strain currently in Congo and Uganda.
And so when it starts off indistinguishable from just the flu, by the time they start hemorrhaging, by the time it gets into those latter stages, is it too late to seek treatment at that point?
So there are A few points about this outbreak and how it differs from previous outbreaks. The strain of Ebola that, for example, was the predominant strain in the 2014 to 2016 outbreak, the same outbreak that led to two cases being in Texas, you know, that was from the Zaire strain, which, as I had, you know, just suggested, is quite deadly. Mm-hmm. But also there had been an opportunity to develop both vaccines and some monoclonal antibody treatments that helped to bring that strain under control. The new strain, the current strain, is called the Bundibugyo Ebola virus. These are generally named after, you know, some geographic rivers mm-hmm. and so forth that are in close proximity. In any case, although Bundibugyo appears to be somewhat less lethal, around 32%, the vaccines and the treatments that had been developed in the past for Zaire, Ebola virus, there's no evidence that they are going to be effective for this new strain.
Mm. How is this transmitted?
Ebola is transmitted in close contact with an index case. And so I want to be very clear about that. This is not an illness that is airborne. This is not similar to COVID-19. And as such, it's very unlikely that this will ever amount to anything more than local regional outbreaks. Mm-hmm. Patients that are infected with Ebola are generally in close contact with someone who has previously had the disease. And by close contact, I really mean, close intimate contact, hugging. Sometimes healthcare workers are some of the first to be secondarily exposed because they're really working with patients. But a casual encounter, such as that you would have by walking past someone in an airplane, that's not a plausible concept for transmission. It just isn't.
But nevertheless, health officials here in the United States are keeping a close eye on it, and that was very obvious with this plane from Paris to Detroit that was diverted because somebody was on board from the Congo.
I think that we should set the record clear on a little bit of this, right? So the Congo is a country of 116 million people, mm-hmm. and the current Ebola outbreak was, you know, to this point in seven adjacent districts. And there really isn't reason to believe that, you know, the remainder of the Congo is at particular risk.
Sure.
Ebola can only spread if a person is showing symptoms. There has been no reporting suggesting that the person in question was exposed to Ebola.
Right.
There's no suggestion that he was sick or posed any public health risk to other passengers. And so the person was diverted because there has been a travel ban placed in the United States. I think the proper evaluation of this is just that this individual, in fact, there really wasn't reason to believe that they were at particular risk.
Sure. How does the global health officials, the World Health Organization, how do they view it? What type of support are they providing in this instance?
And while I want to be clear that this is extraordinarily unlikely to be an issue or a challenge that we find in the United States, it is a rapidly escalating challenge mm-hmm. in Congo and Uganda and Sudan. These are countries that have porous borders. It's a region that is riddled with conflict. Health systems are fairly weak. And so the Director General of the World Health Organization this week declared this Ebola outbreak a public health emergency for international concern. Typically, a committee meets to make that decision. This time, the Director General made the decision unilaterally, which he's permitted to do, but that's actually unprecedented. It's never happened at the World Health Organization before. What does it mean practically? Well, it's an additional mobilization of resources through the United Nations system that will now, you know, be kind of diverted to facilitate and help the response mm-hmm. so that it remains nothing more than a regional outbreak and that they bring it to heal as quickly as possible.
Dr. Joel Kaemeyer, thank you so much for your time this morning, your insight. We really appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
It's my pleasure. I just want to reiterate, negligible, if any, risk in the United States. You know, we should all keep an eye on this one.
Sure.
But I think it's, you know, not going to amount to anything more than that here.
Yeah, fair enough. Doc, we appreciate you. Thank you. We'll talk again very soon. Yeah. Meanwhile, coming up on the other side, Tom Leonard's going to join us. Of course, he's a former Speaker of the House here in Michigan, now with Plunkett Cooney, but he was running for governor as well. He's dropped out of the race. We'll talk to him about the decision by Mike Duggan to get it out of this race and his close history with Mike Duggan. It's next on JR Morning.
I like it. I love it. I want some more of it. Tim McGraw, it's WJR's Tim McGraw VIP experience and your chance to rock when country music legend Tim McGraw brings his Poncho guitar tour to Pine Knot Music Theater August 28th. And you could win a pair of premium pavilion tickets, transportation courtesy of MetroCars, and $100 to Buddy's Pizza to enter. Very simple. Download that free WJR mobile app, find the secret keyword, and then text it to 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. More information.
You like that? You like that?
It's available at WJR.com.
Yeah.
To be fair, I did have to check with Renee Vitale to see if those were the words before I said them.
You did very well.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. It's going to be a heck of a show. Meanwhile, you heard it. Mike Duggan is out of the race for governor. It certainly, at least to State Representative Ron Robinson, it sent shockwaves yesterday.
Well, I mean, I got to tell you, it sent shockwaves through Lansing, to be sure. And I understand the not raising funds aspect of it, but, you know, I don't know. I think you just talk out and talking to my constituents, and, you know, at least in Macomb County, I know a lot of moderates were looking very serious at him. So I don't put a lot of stock in the polls, so I don't know if he thinks he didn't have a path, but just for people I've talked to, not to say he would have won, but I know there was a lot of people extremely, you know, surprised by his announcement yesterday.
Certainly surprised. Again, money gets you elections. At least it helps. And he says that he was unable to fund at a national level. 94% of his money came from voters here in the state of Michigan, but that wasn't going to be enough because he didn't want to have to go back and ask for more from people. And even still, probably be out fundraised by both the Democrats and Republicans. Tom Leonard is the former Speaker of the House, ran for governor in this cycle, and of course, over at Plunkett Cooney now, but he joins us this morning. Tom, it's good to have you back. What did you make of the announcement yesterday? Obviously, there's a lot of internal conversations that go on in these campaigns. You're familiar with those. So what did you make of the public announcement yesterday?
Yeah, Chris, I mean, this was the inevitable, and I had been saying this for months. I mean, let me give you just one quick statistic. Somebody sent me this back in October. So since 1990, there have been 369 gubernatorial elections across the country. Only of those that have ran as independent, only 53% or 14% of them have ever hit 5%. Mm. And only six, less than 2%, have actually won. And
six
I don't think
candidates.
One's ever...
Six candidates.
That's it. Yeah. Since 1990, correct, out of 369 races, and I don't believe one has ever won in a state that has straight party ticket voting. Mm. And, you know, he was just up against a huge challenge. As you mentioned, when you look at the infrastructure that the parties have, I mean, come this fall, you know, each side's going to have $50, $60 million coming from outside, you know, entities. He was not going to have that. It just simply wasn't going to happen.
What has been your relationship with Mike Duggan over the years, both as a lawmaker and otherwise? This is somebody obviously that ushered in a new era of the city of Detroit, but what's been your experience with him?
It's been great. He's somebody that I worked closely with on a couple issues when I was House Speaker, namely auto insurance reform. And somebody that I was always very clear, you know, I was always clear with folks about this, somebody who, even though we had our political differences, somebody that I trusted and considered a friend. We worked very well together. And I'll never forget in 2019 when I reached out, President Trump had nominated me to be the U.S. attorney for the Western District of Michigan, and I needed help. I needed somebody to write me a letter of support on the other side of the aisle. Mike Duggan never wavered. The next day, I had that letter in my inbox, and it was a very sincere and very nice letter. Again, he's somebody that's been a friend of mine, somebody that I trust, you know, despite the political differences.
And I think that was really the basis of his campaign, is being able to break the toxicity, the tribalistic tendencies of these parties. Again, it doesn't feel like we're at the right place, right time. I did maintain that if somebody was going to be able to break that streak of one of the major parties winning in the state of Michigan, it probably would be Mike Duggan. But it just shows you how kind of far away still we are from that.
Absolutely. You know, and listen, and this goes back to when I got out a couple weeks ago. I mean, I was very clear. If you're going to win an argument on the issues, and I believe you can, you better have $10 to $15 million in the bank. And if not, then you're going to have to run a very strong social media campaign. And frankly, on social media, they don't care about issues. It's about the twerking, the dancing, the cussing, the, you know, calling people out, the fighting and the 15-second videos. That's not Mike Duggan. That's not me. And if he was going to run as an independent, he was going to have to do so in a way where he was going to be a disruptor, not one bringing people together, unfortunately.
Mm. What do you make of the polling? He said yesterday that if the polling was even and they had less money, there was a path. If they had even money but the polling was down, there was a path. He says both were down. The Detroit Regional Chamber issued that poll that showed that he was 11 points behind Jocelyn Benson. How much stock do these campaigns put into that polling when making decisions like this?
Well, I think in his situation, they had to put a lot of stock into it, again, because everybody knew what an uphill climb it was going to be. And, you know, what, right this far out, what polling's good for is trends. You know, you can't look at the hard numbers. It's look at the trends. And his numbers were trending the wrong way. Again, he just had an insurmountable challenge. It was going to be very tough for him. And, you know, frankly, I think for him, he made the right decision yesterday.
Mm-hmm. And so what's next? As it relates to, these campaigns leading up to the primary, what do you think we see? I think there's obviously a clearer path for Jocelyn Benson here, but what do we see on both sides leading up?
Yeah, so as you can see, I think over the past several months, I believe her side has really started to coalesce around her. And I think you're going to start to see the same thing to an extent around the Republicans. I mean, earlier this week, I formally and officially endorsed John James. Mm-hmm. I believe he gives us the best chance to win in November. And I think you're going to see other Republicans start to do that as well. Now's the time that you're going to start to see the parties coalesce. They know it's time to win, especially on the Republican side. That's what I think is going to happen.
Tom Leonard, always great insight. Thank you very much. I know it's been already a long year for you and your campaign. My best to the family. Enjoy your Memorial Day weekend. And we'll talk again very soon.
Hey, thank you so much. Have a good one.
Yeah, you got it. That's Tom Leonard here on JR Morning. Coming up on the other side, Jamie Butters is going to join us. He's got a new podcast, or a new show, rather. It starts here on WJR Saturday at 7 a.m. It's called Auto Town. We'll talk to him coming up on the other side. But first, at 7:44, time for Automotive Views with Mike Martinez. It's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Learn more at michiganbusiness.org.
Chrysler's no longer on life support. Stellantis said this week the historic brand, which in recent years has been reduced to a single product, will get some much-needed investment as part of a new company-wide business plan. That involves updating the Pacifica minivan, as well as adding three new crossovers by 2030. Two of those three new crossovers will be priced under $30,000. With the new products, Stellantis aims to grow Chrysler's volume by 60% to about 225,000 vehicles in 2030. It's all part of an aggressive plan that includes multiple new products for the North American market, including new Ram compact and midsize pickups, and an entry-level Dodge that executives liken to a better version of the Hornet. There's been some conjecture that Stellantis might abandon underperforming brands. It's refreshing to see the international automaker recognize Chrysler's value here in the U.S. and give it the money to succeed. With this week's Automotive View, I'm Mike Martinez with Automotive News.
All right, you know, Lloyd's got the day off. I was feeling a little lonely in here. So, Jamie Edmonds joins the show for the rest of the show. Hi, Jamie. Good
Yay!
Morning.
Yay!
Hi, Chris. Did you miss me?
I miss you. Of course I miss you. Yes. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Today's a good day. It's a Friday. It's long weekend coming up.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah, very good. All right. Well, you've joined at a perfect time
because we've got a new show that starts this Saturday morning at 7 a.m. It's called Auto Town, and it's with our good friend Jamie Butters, who we hear from quite frequently on the show, and he's an auto journalist, and he joins us this morning to talk about it. Jamie, good morning. It's good to have you.
Hey, good morning. Glad to be here.
So let's talk about the new show. What are we covering in this thing?
Yeah, you know, Auto Town, I really wanted to have a place kind of to talk about what's happening and put some context around the news. But I have to sort of, you know, to make it so it's welcoming for everybody, you know, if they're an engineer, a designer, if they're an executive, or if they work in a factory, you know, or if they're, I call them, you wouldn't call them an influencer to their face, but, you know, the people who are the savvy consumers that you right. might go to for advice and actually want to follow what's happening in the industry. So it's just kind of a weekly Saturday morning, 7 a.m., get together and talk about the auto industry with smart people.
Well, Jamie, cool name and correct spelling, might I add.
Thank you. Thank you.
You have 25 years covering the automotive industry, and so you've seen it from highs and lows. Where do you see it right now? It's an interesting time with the Chinese vehicles and the threat there.
Yeah, 25 years even just in Detroit. I had done some before I came here. But yeah, it's been, you remember back in the EV boom, and Mary Barra would say how the industry was going through more change in this decade than in the past 100 years. And that seems almost quaint compared to what we're going mm-hmm. through now with the trade wars and the actual conflict in Iran, the wild policy swings. You know, we were all in on EVs, and now we're all out on EVs. And it's really hard for the industry to adapt. And there's the threat of China looming at all the time. We talked about that on the show with John Bozzella, who's the CEO of the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. That's the big DC lobbying group, really influential leader. He was on, my co-host was Joe White, the Pulitzer Prize winner, you know, really legendary auto journalist here in Detroit. So we talked a lot about China and the upcoming USMCA talks, which I think will really have an impact on folks here in Detroit.
Yeah, and Mary Barra's assessment is so spot on, and I think your assessment's even better. It does feel quaint, because what was once an incredible machine on wheels has now turned into an incredible machine on wheels with high-powered computers on board now, too. The technology boom that we've seen, even really over the last, you know, 10 years has been unbelievable.
You're so right, Chris. You know, the thing is, like, automated driving, you know, computers doing the driving is becoming a bigger and bigger part of how Americans get around. You know, you've got the Super Cruise and Blue Cruise, and now Stellantis announced their competitive version yesterday. But also, you know, Waymo is testing on the streets of Detroit. You know, and one of the things Waymo hasn't been able to achieve with their robo-taxis, you know, is driving in snow and ice and heavy rain. And but if I would say, if, you know, if Waymo can figure out in Detroit, there's nothing's off limits, right? but does, you know, robo-taxis, the idea of a robot-driven car is a pretty scary concept until you've done it, and then it's very quickly a pretty boring thing most of the time. You know, maybe a million people have been in one before this year, but it's expanding rapidly across the Sunshine States. And, you know, I think maybe 5 million will try it this year. It's going to keep growing and growing, and it's going to be a thing that the industry has to grapple with.
Well, this industry is just ever evolving. You know, you said it, like, whoever's in office, things can change when it comes to policy and technology. So there's not going to be a shortage of things to talk about on your new show.
Not at all. Somebody was asking me, you know, well, how will you find time to talk about all these things you want to talk about? I'm like, man, I get 50 shots a year. We're also going to have a companion podcast most weeks, you know, that'll be opposite or kind of midweek. And so more chances to talk about all the things, because things do move pretty quickly.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Jamie Butters, we cannot wait to hear the show. It airs Saturday at 7 a.m. It's called Auto Town.
Tomorrow morning.
Unbelievable. Jamie Butters, thank you so much for your time. And we appreciate it and can't wait to hear it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you got it. Jamie, I don't know if you saw this story. This was from about a week ago or so. These Waymos in a Northwest Atlanta neighborhood
were like driving in these cul-de-sacs. Yeah. Yeah. And they like don't know where to go. It's like a GPS issue. So one of the neighbors were like, this is a huge problem. Like we're seeing 50 of these things a day. They just come in. There's nobody in them. They're driving around the cul-de-sacs. They get stuck there. And then, you know, it's a domino effect of trying to have them get out of there. One's got to back up, then the next and the next. But then one neighbor tried to put up one of those stop sign for the kids. It's got like a little cutout of a kid holding a flag, you know, like kids in the area playing
right,
kind of thing.
Right.
And the Waymo freaked out. Like it was, it wouldn't proceed. It created another traffic jam of these driverless Waymos, and it created a huge issue. But it's a funny story of these vehicles trying to figure out where they need to go.
Well, the reason that they were all bunched up like that is because of the flash floods in Atlanta.
Yeah,
and the Waymos got all turned around because of the water.
Correct. So they were trying to divert, but they couldn't figure out where they needed to go. So it was just, it was funny to see all of these things piled up in just this neighborhood, trying to figure out how to get back to where they need to be. Meanwhile, we are going to talk about this coming up in the next hour, but the preview to your latest podcast, Jamie's Journey, Angels Along the Way, and that's going to be very exciting. This thing has really picked up steam. You've got a bunch of episodes out now. I was talking to somebody the other day that said that they were kind of rolling through them and they loved what was going on. So that's been your side project while you've been away from the show for a bit.
Yeah, and I really have a passion for it. It's giving me purpose during this time, making my mess into a message. Mm-hmm. So I have four podcasts out. We'll talk about the latest one coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. But I've been getting a lot of messages from strangers on Instagram, and it's absolutely warming my heart and making me want to do more of it.
That's great. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. Also, Mallory McMorrow joins us. She's a state senator currently running for U.S. Senate here in the state of Michigan. She says she's got a plan to protect families from online scams, certainly potentially a worthy cause. And, of course, Mike Duggan has dropped out of the race. And we'll talk about that coming up at 8:05, but certainly consequential, certainly impactful here as we approach the primaries here in the state of Michigan. That's next on JR Morning.
Despite all of that, we're standing here today where we don't feel like there is a path forward. And I never ran to be a spoiler. I was trying to change politics. And as Mayor LaRusso said, I told everybody from the beginning, if there comes a point where I don't think there's a path forward, I won't continue to pursue it.
And he is not. Former Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan out of the gubernatorial race as an independent. Really, it's twofold. The polls were showing he was down by double digits, at least according to the Detroit Regional Chamber. Poll that was released just over a week ago showed him 11 points down to Jocelyn Benson, who led the pack. And he wasn't able to get the fundraising that the Democrats and Republicans have. He's traveled the country, he said, to try to get some national support, and it's just not there yet. And so as a result, he decided to drop out of this race, consequential for somebody like Mike Duggan, who, you know, ran off the ballot and won in the city of Detroit. So a pretty consequential morning here on JR Morning. Chris Renwick with you, Lloyd Jackson with the day off, and Jamie Edmonds joins us for the rest of the show this morning. What did you make of that announcement from Duggan yesterday?
Well, I saw the press release yesterday morning first, and I was absolutely shocked. I'm like, what made him make that decision yesterday? And, you know, as he talked, he said, we could have been behind in the polls, but ahead in fundraising, or switched that, ahead in fundraising, behind in the polls, and they still could have done it. But if you're behind in both, he just thought it was like a really tough road. And there must have been discussions with Jocelyn Benson.
Well, that was some of the scuttlebutt online. And I think he was asked about it. I think it was the first question he was asked about in that press conference, which was, have you talked to somebody else about another job? Right. Have you talked to anybody else about being a part of a different administration? And he said he hadn't. And he was excited after, you know, over a decade of being the mayor of Detroit and being basically available 24/7. He said, you know, we're going to plan a little vacation to get away here. But he said he hasn't talked to anybody about another job.
Well, I mean, I guess I believe him, take him for his word. He won't be wanting for a job. There'll be plenty of people looking for him to work for them.
Yeah, no, totally. But I again,
whether in the private or political.
For sure. Now, absolutely. I think it does show you a couple things. A, I think it shows you the machine that you are up against with the Democrats and Republicans. I mean, they are behemoths. And they're like that because that has been the system for so long, that they are so entrenched. They are so connected with their donor base nationally that they're able to court donors and divert money to places because of the machine, the well-oiled machine. If you're an independent, this is the second part. It just doesn't feel like you're there yet. There have been opportunities for independents to seek, the presidents and third party and fourth party and things like that. But the independent kind of middle of the road, moderate politician, it's unfortunately not there yet.
Yeah, I think that's kind of sad. Like someone, you know, has to be part of the machine to sort of become the candidate. And I think we need to get to a place where more people can be running.
I think the electorate has to want that, though. And I just don't know.
I think they do. I think there's a big middle, a big set of people that are in the middle that don't identify with either, which is what Duggan was saying. It's just the machine doesn't work out yet for that.
Yeah. No, it's fair. Also, the story of Kyle Busch is incredibly sad. 41 years old, had some sort of serious illness. We don't know what that serious illness is yet. But even, 12 days ago, he was competing at Watkins Glen. And while he was in the car finishing that race, he was calling for a doctor then.
Can somebody try to find Bill Heisel?
They talked back to him. They're like, do you want him on the pit? Do you want him by your bus? Where do you want him? He's like, put him by the bus. And they're like, all right, he'll be there. And then he was testing in Wednesday on a Chevrolet racing simulator, and he became unresponsive. He was transported to a hospital in Charlotte, North Carolina. And that was it for Kyle Busch.
They have not said what the severe illness is, but they made this announcement that he wouldn't race in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. And then 5 hours later, there's this announcement that this 41-year-old, this dad, this husband is gone. It's very sad.
It's very, very sad and mysterious. Like, we have no idea what happened here.
I assume it'll come out, but they're trying to be private about it now. But, I mean, it is shocking.
But he's a two-time NASCAR Cup champ. In one of our Fox News updates, they played some audio from another driver, and I can't remember what driver it was. I'm sorry, but they said, like, this is our Kobe. This is the equivalent of Kobe Bryant and his daughter dying in a helicopter accident. This is NASCAR's Kobe Bryant. This is that type of athlete, that type of guy, competitor, and mm-hmm. and he's gone at the age of 41. Absolutely.
And there's been some other sad news when Greg Biffle had his family in a plane that crashed recently.
Yes.
That's another NASCAR driver that has been lost. And so, yeah, it's been a tough time.
Yeah. Meanwhile, there has been some conversations ongoing about restructuring efforts for the Catholic Church, for the Archdiocese of Detroit. At least 22 parishes across Southeast Michigan would no longer hold weekend masses in future years. That's according to some potential models that the Archdiocese has released. It's a story out of the Detroit News. But you're talking about some potentially locations closing or being used for specific events and not everyday church work or church activities. And then not having a Saturday vigil or a Sunday mass. Particularly in Wayne County and Detroit, those 22 parishes in some of these areas. I mean, that would certainly structurally change how Catholics here practice.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that's been discussed in our church for a long time, and they're encouraging people to join these listening sessions, and, you know, all these churches are having to put out their financials, and, I mean, you get where the diocese is coming from. There aren't enough priests, there aren't enough people going to Mass, so they have to consolidate. And it's very emotional for people if it's your church, the one
right.
that's going to close, that'd be going to forever, but it's something that has already happened in Pittsburgh, so I kind of have a little glimpse into the future.
What have they done in Pittsburgh?
A restructuring plan very similar to this.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll have one priest that sort of goes to one church at 9, maybe, and then he goes to 11 o'clock somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And you're sort of in a grouping of churches. So if you don't make 9 at your church, you're going to have to go to 11 at a different church.
Yeah, we
and
had
it's just the reality.
Yeah, we had a situation where one priest was doing an early mass and left because he thought another priest was coming in. That priest got sick or whatever. Nobody told him, and he had to hurry back. And then that there was another church that he was going to. So they were shuffling the decks there. But again, to your point, the they just don't have the priest. They don't have those that can carry out the mass and provide the Eucharist. So the restructuring is necessary, unfortunately. And there's even been a push towards religion again. People are seeking out religion. And unfortunately, it's a tough time for the church.
Yeah, I mean, 90 fewer priests in 10 years. They have to do something.
That's significant. AAA projecting that 45 million Americans will travel at least 55 miles between yesterday and Monday. And that's even up from last year, just slightly, but it is up from last year.
No, brakes,
yep, you're going to need a lot of gas. And, so more people are still going to even try to get out as the price of gas has gone up.
I don't know how they figure this out. It was 44.8 million last year, and this year they've gone to 45. So you're right, an uptick. But I'll tell you what, I filled up my gas tank yesterday for $110.
Over $5 a gallon, I saw this morning. Yeah. $5.29.
Yeah. Yeah. It's absolutely crazy.
$5.29?
Yeah,
where?
I saw this morning. Right in your neck of the woods.
Oh, perfect.
Wow. Perfect. So, yeah, exactly.
Which is close to me. So I think it's going to be like that everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. And we're getting into that time of year where gas already kind of went up because of the summer months. Coming up on the other side, Mallory McMorrow is going to join us, a state senator here in the state of Michigan, also running for U.S. Senate here in the state of Michigan. She's got a plan to protect families from online scams. It's next on JR Morning. So to Senate candidate, both at the U.S. level and, of course, the senator here in the state of Michigan, Mallory McMorrow, has released a plan to help protect Michigan families from online scams. This has become an absolute scourge amongst many all across the country, but certainly here in the state of Michigan, as people have been targeted by bad actors, and it has become out of control, quite frankly. And so Mallory McMorrow is releasing this plan to push back and tech companies that will enable these online scams to target folks here in the state of Michigan, and Mallory McMorrow joins us to talk about it. It's good to have you.
Good to be back. Good morning.
First, before we get to that quickly, just want to get your thoughts on Mike Duggan dropping out of the governor's race. What did you make of that?
Yeah, my response is that Donald Trump's approval rating is underwater right now. And we see that people are looking for somebody who's going to stand up and fight back. Gas is hovering around $5 a gallon with the illegal war in Iran. And that's what people are looking for, somebody who's going to fight for them.
Except when he endorses some people across other states, those people have been winning. What do you make of that?
Yeah, Michigan is a very different state than some of the deep red states in the South. You know, this is a moment where Donald Trump demands loyalty above all else. And he's been going on this revenge tour, taking out anybody in his party that dares to disagree with him, even on things like the Epstein files. And I hope that we can unanimously agree that the systematic trafficking of girls is an abomination. That's a really risky position for Mike Rogers, the Republican in the Senate race, who's going to have to figure out who he stands for. Is it Michiganders or is it Donald Trump?
Meanwhile, how does this plan that you've unveiled, how does this protect families from online scams?
So increasingly, these online scams aren't just appearing in, I don't know if you remember the old emails that we all used to get saying that somehow a Nigerian prince had a lot of money and he wanted to transfer it to you and he was going to give you a cut. They were pretty gimmicky and you could see through them back then. Now, increasingly, these scams are happening on Facebook, on Instagram, on social media platforms, and the platforms themselves get a cut every time one of these transactions goes through. So there is no incentive for the platforms to crack down on bad actors. So my plan would revise Section 230. This is a part of federal law that the platforms have used for years to say, we're just a platform, we're not responsible for the content that goes on the platform. This would require that the platforms verify every single one of the advertisers before they're allowed to advertise on the site. It would require that users, if you see a scam, that there's a clear way to report it and the platform has to take action and report it back to you. And it would also empower state attorneys general with more resources to go after and to prosecute these scammers. That is something that our attorney general, Dana Nessel, has been trying to do for years. But this has ballooned to a point where Michiganders have lost $1.7 billion with a B to these scammers. And we need to do a lot more.
And so would there be some kind of compensation for the people who've lost that billion with a B?
Yeah, that would be the hope, is that if there's actually a way to hold these scammers accountable, that you can get your money back and there's recourse here. Too often, it's just a scam, and because these are bad actors and sometimes foreign actors, that money is simply gone. And I know a lot of people who I have talked to said there's sort of a sense of shame in not wanting to talk about being duped by one of these scams. You sort of think that on the personal level, I should be smarter than this. I should be able to recognize it. But with AI and the fact that it's on a platform, if you're scrolling through Instagram, you trust that something being advertised to you on Instagram is valid because it's on, you know, a platform from an American company. And that's simply not true.
I mean, many of these digital scams that are out there are being backed by, you know, these transnational criminal organizations. What role do our intelligence agencies provide in trying to stop these as well?
I mean, it's just whack-a-mole. It is so hard to find and track down, to your point, transnational actors who hide, you know, in other countries and shell companies. So by requiring the platforms to verify first anybody who advertises on their platform and ensuring that Meta, who owns, you know, Facebook and Instagram, is responsible for knowing what's on their platform, that is a really strong wall that we can build to protect Michiganders.
I saw on your Twitter account that you sat down with some Trump voters and you were able to have a conversation, which is unbelievable. Yeah. Because I don't know if people do that anymore, but what came out of that conversation?
It was a great conversation. You know, I went in just wanting to get to know each other first. I think so much of the rhetoric now is hyper-partisan. It's red versus blue. It's Democrat versus Republican. And increasingly, people view the other side as the enemy. That's incredibly toxic. And it is not how we need to move forward as a state or as a country. What I heard was we have a lot in common. There was a woman who works in marketing, and that's something that was in my career background. So we commiserated about some similarities in our careers. She found herself on unemployment for the first time and was talking about the troubles navigating that system. There was another gentleman who shared that he works at a nursing home as a janitor in his day job and how much he loves his job, but that the cost of everything is through the roof right now. So he does DoorDash in his spare time, but with gas prices, you know, that extra income is gone. And we were just able to talk as fellow Michiganders. I talked about my daughter and my family and kind of my journey through career. And I heard from them that everybody that I sat with there wants to get to a place where we can just talk to each other. And maybe we talk to each other about sports and our lives and don't immediately start with politics. You know, politics is really important. I'm in it. It's how we get to a place where we move policy, but it shouldn't be our entire identities. Let's talk about what we have in common first.
I can confirm you are a Tigers fan. You and I were standing in line for the carousel at Comerica Park that one day to get our kids on there. So I can confirm.
It was a long line.
Yes, it was. It was a very long line on a kid's day on
it
a Sunday.
Kid's day.
Yes,
kids
that's
day,
exactly
yeah.
Right. I was reading a story that kind of puts you in between Haley Stevens and Abdul El-Sayed. Haley Stevens being more the moderate, Abdul El-Sayed being more the progressive, and you in the middle. A, do you buy that narrative? And B, with the release of the autopsy of the 2024 election from the DNC, one of the things that it suggested was a shift away from identity politics and toward middle class appeal. Is that something that you feel like you can do in this campaign? We have just a minute left.
Yeah. So I think for me, I am the establishment outsider with a track record. So exactly to your point, I think a lot of people are frustrated with a Democratic Party, a national brand, that has drifted too far away from what regular people think about every day. I am somebody who's now been in the state Senate for almost 8 years and have a really strong track record of delivering on expanding access to childcare and universal pre-K, breakfast and lunch, affordable housing, the things that people see and feel in their everyday lives. And looking forward to running through the tape in August.
Mallory McMorro, we appreciate your time. Thank you. And we'll talk again very soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Yep, you got it. Meanwhile, Jamie, coming up on the other side, we're going to preview your latest episode of your podcast, Jamie's Journey, Angels Along the Way. And we can't wait to hear from it because some of the pieces that you put out have been absolutely fantastic. And it's been absolutely huge, well-received. And we'll talk about that on the other side. It's Cher Morning. Lloyd with the day off, but Jamie's here, and we're very excited about it. And the podcast is Jamie's Journey, Angels Along the Way, and the episodes have been fantastic. I mean, I'm not just saying that because we're friends, we work together. They've been really, really good, Jamie, and I've talked to people that have been listening, and they love it as well. So it's been really well received.
Well, let's be honest, you are biased for sure.
I am but biased. I am. But I'm trying to be I'm playing it down the middle. I mean, look, it's so good because it's probably cathartic for you, but then also you're helping other people, which is the point here.
That was my goal when I started this thing, and now I'm starting to get more and more messages from strangers on Instagram that they're listening, they have similar stories to me, that, you know, they also had to tell their 5-year-old son that they have the same kind as me, that they use this wig lady. Like, there's so many similarities within stories, and I think it's reaching people, and it makes me really happy.
So you've done a number of episodes, and if you would like to listen to this, if you haven't, you should, first of all. Second of all, you can go to anywhere where you get your podcast. Just type in Jamie Edmonds, and it'll come up. So you've hit a number of different issues. You've talked about the surgeries and just the initial finding out about cancer and the mm-hmm. the path that you would be on. But this now is something a little different.
Well, I named it Angels Along the Way because I just felt like people were stepping into my life and helping me get through this. And the hair part is really, really hard. I mean, for a woman, especially to lose hair, I mean, that's tough. And just through a simple Google search, I found Susan at Antonino Salon in Birmingham.
Who's
I went
Susan?
Out there for a conference. Her name is Susan Thomas, and uh-huh. she used to have a brick and mortar on Woodward called Susan Special Needs. And she would help women with wigs and also with other products that you need during surgery. Now she works at Antonino Salon part-time. Okay. And I found her. She helped me fit me for this wig that looks like me. It looks like my hair. I feel confident in it. And so I just wanted to talk to her for this podcast because she's one of my angels.
Well, that has to be one of the difficult things. Obviously, you're dealing with your body and the way that you feel and the way the treatment is making you feel, things like that. But then to have the physical reminder, mm-hmm. that has to be a difficult hurdle, certainly.
Well, yeah, sometimes I walk by the mirror and I'm like, who's that person? Who's that? Yeah. I mean, it's been an interesting journey, but as you said, like, talking about it has helped me. Hearing other people's stories has helped me. So I'm hoping I'm creating this ecosystem where people can feel a little bit better about going through the hardest time of their life.
Yeah. And so when you, cause there was probably a lot of different options for different hairstyles, things like that, different wigs. How did you mm-hmm. kind of settle where you did?
Well, I named the podcast In My Wig Era.
Nice.
Because I'm learning this as I go along. Yep. I mean, who knows about any of this? But I mean, there's like different kinds of wigs. There's synthetic, there's human hair. There's like, you know, they have to fit it to your head. There's tape, there's glue. I mean, stuff I had no mm-hmm. idea about. And so I'm learning as I go here. And I just felt that this was a good episode to just talk about it because people are going to go through it as well. And some women are going to do cold capping and they're going to keep their hair. And that's wonderful. I'm glad that they can do it. I just couldn't do that.
And what's cold capping?
Cold capping, I should talk about it in one of these episodes, right? Is when you put dry ice on your head in this helmet and it's supposed to save or preserve some of your hair while you're going through treatment. And you still lose some, but you can keep some. And yeah. I know a lot of women swear by it because then you can keep your own hair.
It sounds chilly.
I did it like I was so cold. I don't like to be cold, Chris.
I was going
to
say, if you guys don't, I mean, there have been times Jamie's got an electric blanket in here. She's got her coat on. She's like, we got to turn the heat up. So you run a little cold anyway.
I run cold anyway. And so putting dry ice on your head for 8 hours during treatment just wasn't for me.
Oh, you have to leave it on that long.
Oh, you didn't know that part?
8 hours.
Yeah, so I hired a professional just for the first time. I was going to teach one of my family members how to do it moving forward. But they come with you. You have dry ice that you have to pick up. They put it in the cap and she tests the temperature with the thermometer. And then every 20 minutes, they change it to the cold temperature that you need. And then she was going to come home with me and do it for 5 hours after treatment. And if you heard my first segment, my first podcast, I had 12 daily or weekly treatments. Right. So that was a lot of time. And I have a young daughter who you might hear. She's playing Barbies very near me. No childcare today.
Yeah.
It just felt like too much for me. So that's why I went a different route. And that's how I met Susan. And that's the topic of episode 4, which is Angels Along the Way. It's about the wig. And then I have a little tease for episode 5.
Uh-huh.
I interviewed my husband because he's part of this journey too. He's an angel here inside my house. And so I find that conversation like, there are funny moments. He's a funny guy, and I allowed him to talk about the Pistons at the end of it.
Very nice. I was going to ask if there was some basketball discussion in this upcoming.
100%.
Yeah.
I had to let that happen.
Yeah. Well, so Susan, one of your angels, but then you've also found Samantha along the way.
Samantha is the wig. I've named her, and I just love it. And people like on Instagram are messaging me like, Samantha looks great, as if it's like a person. So It's been really nice. It's been cathartic for me to talk about, and there's this little community now messaging me, and I love that.
Do you, because I remember when we had these discussions off the air, and you're like, I don't know what to do. I think I want to do something, and we were kind of talking about what that was going to look like for you. You know, there was a little bit of just hesitancy a little bit because you're going through something incredibly difficult, and all the people around you are going through something difficult with you. And you know, did you expect to feel the way that you do now about this kind of how, or I guess, how has that changed your feeling now that you've gone through a number of these episodes, you've got this feedback? Did you expect to feel like this at this point?
I was a little nervous because there was negativity online, and I don't know if that was going to come my way with an announcement, which it absolutely is not. Mm-hmm. And I feel great about it. It feels like this was what I was supposed to do. I have this platform thanks to WJR, the resources that they're giving me to do this. And I feel like it was the right decision 100%.
Yeah. Well, it's spectacular. The shows have been really, really good. And I don't just say that because I'm your friend. They really have been very good and really informative for people that are going through this or have somebody going through this so that you can relate to a certain degree. And it's called Jamie's Journey, Angels Along the Way. And the new episode is out.
It's out.
Yesterday.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then the next one will drop with your husband on Thursday, correct? Next Thursday?
Thursday of next week. Yeah, and I have all kinds of ideas, Chris, of reaching out to people just touched by any kind of cancer. And so I have some other podcasts lined up of people in our community touched by cancer too.
Awesome. Well, this is good news. It's a Good News Friday. It's great that you're here hanging out with me for a little while. It's good news that the new episode of the podcast is out. So it's all really, really good news. We'll also talk about, I mean, it's also Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, it sure is. Long weekend.
Fire up the grill.
Yay!
Right? Yes. And Bush's is celebrating Grill Fest. We're talking about that on the other side. It's JR Morning. All right, Jamie, you guys fire up the grill for Memorial Day?
We fire up the grill all the time.
Yeah, fair enough.
Memorial Day or not.
Yeah, what's you got a menu? You got something on tap? What do we got going on for this weekend?
Well, actually, my husband is golfing in some events, and so I don't usually do the grilling, but maybe I'll get some tips here from Chef Russell.
Yeah, Chef Russell Palmer is the executive chef at Bush's Fresh Food Market and joins us this morning because it is Grill Fest, and Bush's is celebrating it. Chef, good morning. It's good to have you.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be on the show.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Grill Fest. What's going on? Where can we find it?
Yeah, absolutely. So all 16 stores, Bush's Fresh Food Market, Metro Detroit area in Ann Arbor. We got two stores in the Ann Arbor area. We are doing Grill Fest this weekend.
So what does that mean? What does that entail?
Right. So we got all kinds of different offerings. We got full and half slab baby back ribs. We got pulled pork sandwiches, beer brat, made fresh right at Bush's Fresh Food Market, fresh corn on the cob, and we got salads that you can purchase to complete your sides and your meals.
Jeez, it's a one-stop shop. That's very cool. Right, let me ask you, though, because you're the professional here. Do you prefer charcoal? Yeah. Do you prefer pellet? Do you prefer the green egg?
Smoking.
Propane? What's your advice?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you have both, and both are super awesome. Everybody's got their top pick, right? Charcoal's got that rich flavor. You manage the airflow and the heat, and you move, you know, you've got the hot side and the cold side, where propane's real fast. You can get right in there and start cooking right away and do your, and you can do a lot of the same types of techniques with propane, but they are different from a flavor profile.
How do you grill? I mean, are you there with the temperature, you know, thermometer and making sure everything is cooked exactly perfectly? Because I know a lot of people don't. And is there a danger there?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. You know, like having a thermometer, I love a digital thermometer for doing any kind of cooking of meat. Getting your temperatures just right. And guys, I've really got to put that out there. Like that temperature for poultry has got to be 165 or above. And, you know, like chicken breasts, you know, you want to have 165 to 170. With a dark meat, you're going in 170 to 180. But just having a thermometer, like a digital thermometer on hand to make certain you get exactly what you want every single time is the best way to go, you know. And then let your meats rest. So that's really important too. So, I put my thermometer in my meats and we've cooked it perfectly. We pull it off the grill and then we just want to let it hang out in a platter and just let it rest, because those muscle fibers, they really need to relax a little bit for a little while. So the juices in that cut of meat that you've got, that you spent all that money and hard work on, to kind of rest, relax, get the juices out back into the cut. When you cut into it, they don't all spill out.
Chef, that is my biggest faux pas when I'm on the grill. I get a ribeye, I throw that thing on, I got it cooked perfectly to medium rare, and now you're telling me I gotta wait? Oh, it's terrible. It's a terrible 10 minutes.
It's so difficult. I know, you like just want to dive right in. It looks so good, it's ready to go. But yeah, you want to give it a hot second.
And just lastly here on the grill fest, so are we buying these meats to take home to our house to grill, or are they cooked and prepared?
Yeah, okay, so that's perfect. Great. Yes, we are cooking them right on the grills. We got them right out in front of the stores. Every single store is going to have a different setup, like they're doing their decorations and stuff like that, but they're going to be cooking those hot for you, wrapping them, ready to go right then and there. But I would definitely say, like, get your full, you know, your full setup. You know, grab a pulled pork sandwich, grab a beer brat, you know, go into the store and check out the meat departments themselves, because they've got this massive array of different marinated meats and kebabs. We have Kebabarama coming up June 1st through the 14th. We sell those on a regular basis, and they just do so much hard work and wonderful displays. You've got to check it out. You've got to go into the store, too.
Chef Russell Palmer is the executive chef at Bush's Fresh Food Market. Grill Fest is happening this weekend, Saturday, Sunday, from 11:30 to 6 o'clock, all 16 Southeast Michigan locations. Chef, we appreciate your time this morning. Have a great weekend behind the grill, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you so much. It was great to be here. Thanks so much.
Yeah, you got it, of course. Yeah, we love, actually, you know, it's unfortunate. So we're selling our house. So we're, I'm trying to not.
Where is your grill currently?
The grill is still there. The grill is there, but we're really trying to not like cook things in the house or bring, you know, food. Like we're just trying, because showings and stuff. So we're trying to keep everything pretty stationary. So I haven't done any
then
grilling.
Go to Bush's.
It's exactly right. It's exactly what I'm going to do.
We want it now.
Yeah, exactly. I hear Olivia in the background there. She's busy.
Yes, sorry about
after
that.
No, it's great. It's absolutely great.
Yeah, Barbie playtime is happening.
I love it. I absolutely love it. We got a note from a listener, as a matter of fact. And I got to tell you, so, you know, I coach both the boys' baseball teams. Jake's in coach pitch.
and Henry is in T-ball. I got an I said this, I think, earlier this week or late last week. I don't remember. Last week, remember Wednesday? It was, like, really cold.
Yes.
It was, like, 35, 40 degrees, whatever it was. It was very cold. How many batters do you think I hit that day, Jamie?
Over, under five.
Okay, it was under. I hit three. I hit three, and one of the kids I hit was one of our little guys, and I hit him right on the thumb as he was holding the bat. It left an imprint, a thread imprint on his finger. I felt absolutely terrible. But I hit three kids. So I made mention of it on the air just briefly.
Was there a brawl after that?
No, but I did say, you guys, I'm owed three pitches that you get to throw at me. So I let them throw them at me. They missed, but I gave them the option. Okay, so so I mentioned the story. I get an email from Tony. He said, hey, Chris, listen to you guys on my way into work every morning. Heard you mention today you do coach pitch with your son and have hit a couple batters. I, too, have a coach pitch age kid, and we're in our second year as coach pitch, and I was also worried about hitting batters. I've been using a different pitching technique that seems to work. Instead of standing to pitch, try kneeling on one knee and throwing the ball like a dart. You're on their level, and it gets them into the strike zone. I tried it, and it worked out well. How about that?
Oh, look at that. So the community helping you.
Tony saving the day. And we appreciate that. All right, Jamie, have a great weekend. Have a great Memorial Day. And we'll talk
again.
Yeah. That's going to do it for us. Kevin Dietz is next here on WJR.